Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Barry, season 4, episode 7, A Nice Meal is over, but we are just getting started here on Post-Show Recaps. Hi, everybody. Mike Bloom here, ready to dig in with an episode that is bringing the thunder like a Fast and Furious movie with the volume jacked all the way up. My ears are ringing, my brain is humming from the penultimate installment of not only Barry season 4, but Barry period, as we truly see all of our characters now converging in Los Angeles for what should be one blood-filled finale that'll have you gathering up even more mops than Fuchs and his goons. Of course, I am joined by one ultimate badass killer, so I can call her the Obok. It is the great Latanya Starks. Latanya, how are you doing?
I don't think I've ever been called an ultimate badass killer to my face before.
Well, considering what happened to those guys' faces after they were being told to their face that they were ultimate badass killers, I think you could eventually take a different path and be the one successful ultimate badass killer, yeah. Considering the other four examples.
Even the hot one.
Exactly. Oh, Isaiah. He gave great head, and he was a great head.
He could get it. That was my favorite line of the show.
Yeah, this episode was a real return to form for NoHo Hank. After last week, we didn't know how to gauge where he was 8 years from the last time we saw him, considering the pretty scary way that he ended that dinner scene last episode. This time around, we got literal Wile E. Coyote shenanigans from him, which was classic Coke, NoHo Hank. But still, this episode ends with a tinge of intimidation and scariness from him, and we look upon what's coming in the finale with a lot of our characters in precarious positions. Gene Cousineau, of course, puts his foot in his mouth for the umpteenth time and possibly goes to jail for it. We have Barry being able to escape the captivity of Jim Moss, but perhaps facing the possibility of losing a lot more than blood. And Sally and John are now captured by NoHo Hank. Fuchs is able to maintain the Raven's ruse for the time being, but Perhaps the appearance of Barry is going to change that in this cat and mouse and I suppose cheese game between these three guys. There's a lot to get into from episode 7, but overall, LT, what did you think of it?
I thought it was a really good installment of Barry. I think that we got some of the answers to what was done to the Vanity Fair reporter, just in terms of torture techniques that were used on Barry in this episode. Being told that his arms and legs had been cut off was just like really gnarly to figure out whether or not that was the truth. We got an answer to whether or not Fuchs was going to continue to F up everything. And the answer is apparently no, since prison.
They say prison changes a man, and it made Fuchs into the criminal mastermind he always thought that he was.
Yeah, and we got it confirmed that Sally did indeed end up back in L.A. With her son in tow, which is a terrible idea for all involved.
So episode 7 is always the penultimate episode for Barry, and it's always an important one. It's always written by the same person, Liz Sarnoff, formerly my beloved Lost, and also penning some of the best episodes of this series. Season 1, episode 7, had Barry dramatically killing Chris and then going to the showcase performance and delivering the best acting performance of his life. Season 2, episode 7, was the audition episode where Fuchs meets Gene for the first time and gets him out into the middle of the woods and shows him Janice's body. And then season 3, episode 7, was when we introduced something we'll see in this episode in the tripping sequence on the beach with all the people that Barry had killed. I will say that episode 7 comes down a bit in terms of the audaciousness of the previous two episodes, which especially with the stuff in Barry's and Sally's house was really bleeding reality into fiction. We'll get this in a couple of instances in this episode, but by and large, we are back to the reality of Barry, which is still fairly silly, but still contained that background dark tinge into it. As you mentioned, we did see some inevitable stuff happen. Sally coming back to LA and bringing John alongside her, and of course that being a bad decision. And then Gene, mere minutes after saying that he is a changed man and no longer a narcissist, falling right into Jim Moss's trap of deciding to completely forego his entire Medium article-based crusade for the idea of Daniel Day-Lewis playing him in a movie. And so the way our characters end up in these positions at the end of the episode is predictable on the one hand, but unpredictable in the other, in terms of looking at what this show is able to do and where it's able to go. And due to the fact that we only have one installment left, in my opinion, anything goes.
Exactly. It's so predictable from what we have and grounded in what we know of these characters from having watched them for the past several seasons. And at the same time, very unpredictable because we've taken the journey this season and we've had a time jump and people, you know, can in fact change. So you wonder whether or not the characters of Barry have changed. And the answer really is not that much. Even if there are surface changes, they're still the people that we met way back in season 1.
All right, well, let's tuck into a nice meal as we sit down for the first course into a hell of a trippy aperitif. We are treated to Bill Hader's emotional sobbing through these very abstract images of a sun rising over these mysterious prairies that we keep revisiting, to the beach that we know is the place Barry went in this dreamlike purgatorial state back in season 3, where he met all of these people that he previously killed, to Jim Moss taunting him. So you're a man of God now. You think because you repented, you get to choose where you're going to go after you die. You know where you're going, and you're afraid. And as you mentioned, he is utilizing a lot of scare tactics, saying that he cut his arms and legs off, that he's going to make him suffer by seeing the people that he loves before he dies. And then, of course, in true Barry fashion, this psychological sequence cuts to the pretty hysterical image of Barry wearing these, like, sensory deprivation goggles hooked up to an IV of clearly something that is meant to have him tripping balls as he is just wailing and thrashing about.
It was a really great image. Like, that was a great cut too. And you wonder, you know, the whole time, like, where did Jim Moss learn all of these things? Like, how did he procure all of these tools that he has? What is in that bag? The IV bag? It's just so many questions to go along with that imagery. But yeah, just immediate laughter.
What I imagine is maybe I just have Liz Sarnoff and her body of work on the brain, but I would imagine that Jim Moss was some sort of Saeed Jarrah type. He was this black ops guy hired under the table to get intel out of some big baddies by any means possible. And so while he does seem to have some sort of understanding of how the criminal system works and how to tail people and stake them out, like when he was trying to figure out where Barry was in episode 4, he's much more used to getting information out of people using his literal tools in the toolbox.
Yeah, clearly. That the idea that he could be a Saeed is really interesting to me, because that makes total sense, but at the same time, it's out of nowhere, like very. But yeah, it's just, I was interested in seeing, after we saw what happened to the Vanity Fair reporter, I was just interested in like going to this place and seeing exactly what Jim Moss had in his like kit, you know, like what type of tactics he was able to use to make people change or get information out of them or whatever it is that he did. So going to this, having this scene was really fulfilling for me because I just personally am interested, I guess, in torture.
Wow. I did not even have to torture you to get that information out of you, LaTanya.
I don't know why I said that on a podcast.
This is why I'm happy we don't have a Posha Recaps out of context account.
Yeah, exactly. Seriously.
Well, Gene is trying to bring some crucial context to the upcoming biopic of Barry Berkman as he has gone to the public forum of Medium to post this article in all caps, "Don't let Warner Brothers exploit her death." And then we see like the first little paragraph. He's essentially talking about what he mentioned in the last episode. The whole reason he came back to LA in the first place is saying, "Don't sensationalize my girlfriend's death. Don't elevate this serial killer." And as Tom is going to verbalize, it seems like things are going well. Gene is getting a groundswell of support from people. That being said, knowing the show, you knew that other shoe was going to drop either from Gene or from some sort of external source, that all this goodwill was going to go out the window.
I knew last episode when he told Leo that he was a changed man, that the other shoe was going to drop. And it's very interesting how they bring that about in this episode, I think.
Let's stop in at NoHo Ball as Hank is staring contemplatively at the crystal ball statue. I would imagine his inner monologue in this scene is pretty much what would Cristobal do.
Yeah.
Here. I think that very much plays into the plaque that we saw last episode, this sort of appropriation of Cristobal's dream and how this ended up succeeding quite literally in Hank's success here. He's in a precarious situation. We saw at the end of last episode, he tried to stand up to Fuchs, kick him out of his house, and Fuchs said no. So now he has to deal with a squatter on his property. And so he is going to put on his most stylish pair of Big Boss pants. And he is going to bring in, as you mentioned before, the four ultimate badass killers, the Foo Box. We've got Francisco, we've got Constantine, we've got Todd, but most importantly, we've got Isaiah.
Most important, hot Isaiah. So attractive. Way too attractive to be a killer, I think.
I mean, those are the ones you have to watch out for, right?
If very true.
Ryan Murphy Netflix shows have taught me anything.
And they haven't.
Yes, exactly. That's the point. What I do love about this scene is Hank very specifically orders that when the Foo Box go take care of Fuchs, I want you to tell him that NoHo Hank did this. And it reminded me so much of Fuchs infamously whispering to Gene, something that we find out at the end of season two, mm-hmm. Barry Berkman did this. Here, it's obviously using a different context of Hank being the one to put his name on it. But I do love getting to twist that simple sentence and use it for very different reasons here, both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I did not think of that because I'm not smart sometimes when I watch this show. The overwhelming, just what is going to happen of this show just kind of takes control of my mind sometimes. And I don't call back to anything that happened before. But yeah, that's very interesting. And just like a great turn of phrase, too. I mean, tell so-and-so I want them to know it was me is a classic a classic thing that you say to someone when they're being murdered.
Yeah, Hank is definitely a queen, maybe a queen of thorns. Definitely runs into some thorns when he tumbles down that hill later on.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, let's go back into Barry's brain for a hot second. So he has turned his apologies from John to his own father figure. He starts profusely apologizing to Gene, and we're briefly transported to this very surreal setting where Barry is imagining Gene in, and later Jim in as well when Jim is talking to him. It seems like they're at a dinner table during like a reception or an after party. And I do love Barry trying to apologize over and over again, and all Gene is doing is just shoveling down food. And all Gene is responding with is, oh, this is great. You should try this.
Yeah, do you want some of this? Yeah, that was a really weird scene for just at a dinner table with like random people. And Jim Moss just happens to be one of those people at the table too. Very, very interesting that his mind would go there.
Yeah, so what I was thinking back to is one of the many trippy sequences we had in the beginning of this season. We had this one moment where this unnamed couple walks into a wedding reception, and it may or may not be Sally and Barry's then fictional child, as we then go into the two of them, older versions of them, dancing on this occasion. Could it be possible that Gene and Jim are at this reception for this very mythical wedding?
That makes total sense, actually. Yeah, it could be. Gene looks great, if that is the case.
Yeah, he certainly maintained things a lot better than Barry over the past 8 years. So, yeah, while Barry is trying to come to grips with everything that's happening around him, so is Jim Moss, as Barry is going to drop this bomb while heaving apologies that I shouldn't have given you the $250,000. Of course, we know back in season 3, Barry had been given this job from Hank to blow up the Bolivians on behalf of him and Cristobal. That was with that hilarious detonation app that didn't work, and then it did, and Barry gets paid in kind for that, and he brings the money immediately over to Gene as a gesture of goodwill to be like, hey, I'm sorry I threatened your family yeah. and put you in a trunk and had a bunch of wild dogs chasing after you. And this is what is going to send Jim completely off the Barry scent and completely onto Gene's. This is the last time that we're going to see Jim in the same room as Barry. The next time that Barry comes to, Jim is nowhere to be seen. So what I imagine the sequence of events was that Jim heard this tidbit get dropped. He looks through this little red book that I'm assuming was Lon's notes of Gene's one-man show, confirms the $250,000 there, and then he just gets up and leaves Barry behind, knowing that this is a question that has to now be answered immediately.
Yeah, he immediately takes action and gets the DA involved in everything, which, I mean, like, I completely understand if I learned that the man that I thought had told me complete truth about something had made 250 grand and if essentially profited off the death of my daughter, then that would make me start to think maybe he was involved in it in a way that he didn't tell me about.
This is the story of the frog being consistently stung by the scorpion, right?
Yes.
Gene does this one-man show, and it's become abundantly clear to Jim, oh, this guy is trying to, despite the fact he's insisting it isn't the case, bank off your daughter's tragic death at the hands of this madman. And now there's the possibility that he is making money off of this spotlight as well. It makes sense as to why Jim does a complete K-turn and gets the hell out of there, that it means leaving the prospect of getting revenge on Barry behind to take out the much more personal matter of this guy who has really screwed him over in a greater light, in his opinion.
Yeah. It just feels like we can, like, feel the betrayal, like, vibes coming off of the screen from Jim Moss, and the sense of urgency that he has to just get out of this situation that he's in with Barry, and just, like, I have bigger fish to fry. Like, Gene is ultimately the person that it was instantly the person that he was looking at, in terms of, like, who is responsible for his daughter's death, who profited from his daughter's death, like, what happened there. And, you know, he was able to get suspicion off of himself and onto Barry, but now he's learning that Gene is way more dug into this situation than he ever let on.
Speaking of Gene, the sting operation is about to begin. Though, I guess I'll ask you first, when Gene gets this call from, quote, Matt Iserson, this agent at UTA, about Daniel Day-Lewis from My Left Foot, possibly playing Gene Cousineau in this biopic, did you take this at face value, or did you believe that something was coming at the end of all this?
I thought something was coming, but it wasn't. What came was not what I expected. I did not know if this was a tactic of that, maybe, like, that Hank was using for some reason or what. But I was not expecting what came at the tail end of it at all.
I mean, good on Jim Moss. I'm assuming that he's the one that organizes this pseudo intervention at the end of the episode. He really mobilized forces. Now, maybe a good amount of time had indeed passed between Barry talking about the $250,000 and him putting everything together, but the fact he's able to call up this former acting student named Brad, tell him the situation, yeah, get him to play this part, and then give him the entire ruse of Matt Iserson is just, he's fantastically good at improv, which makes sense. He is played by Nate Cordry, who we know is no slouch when it comes to
That's
comedy.
True.
Really good on everyone's parts for making it happen the way they do.
Very quick, this little sting operation. Yeah.
And Gene does have some initial trepidation. He thinks it's Tony Danza effing with him, but once he figures out it's not the boss, he doesn't even get a whiff of any BS that's coming his way.
I was, like, trying to listen to the voice and was like, does that sound like Tony Danza? Huh. Could they have gotten a Tony Danza to do a guest voice on here?
Hey, Gene, it's me.
That would be so wild, because we talked about this back when the biopic first ended up getting brought up. Is anybody going to play these characters of Gene and Barry? We occasionally get celebrities playing themselves on the
right
show. Sometimes we also get the Guillermo del Toro playing another part. And it seems for the most part, pretty high-name celebrities do not play themselves. With no offense to Allison Jones or Jay Roach. So when we keep talking about Mark Wahlberg, I would be very surprised for various reasons that we would see him on the show.
Yeah. Really surprised for a lot of reasons, because, like, one of the reasons that they gave is that he's, like, very pro-police. And I was just like, there's no way.
Yeah, considering what he has done in the past, I would imagine he's not the most keen on law enforcement. I also love later on this small detail about how he's apparently terrified of the woods, which I think is both a hilarious line, but also maybe an accidental callback to the infamous M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Happening.
Oh my god. Well, yeah, that would make me terrified of the woods too, if I did The Happening.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg's acting in The Happening in itself is pretty terrifying.
Acting is stretching it, I think. Acting is a strong term for what was going on in that movie.
Well, someone who is stretching out their Sky mileage points, perhaps, is Sally. As you mentioned, she is back in LA, and the first person she calls is Jean. Which,
I mean, who?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a good question. Who else would she call? She's burned bridges with everyone else in LA. That's the point Lindsay made. And Jean was an okay parental source, obviously not on the level that he was for Barry, but he's someone she always looked up to and went for advice to as recent as episode 2 of this very season.
Yeah, I think Jean has always been kind of a constant for Sally. She really appreciated the fact that he was, you know, even though we learned that his tactics were somewhat abusive, that he was able to get the performances out of her that he did, and that he was able to get her to evoke the emotions that he did. So she, you know, as a result of that, she's always been really close with Jean and kind of thinks of him, I think, as a father figure as well, and someone to go to when there's trouble.
Well, Sally is essentially going to call and say, "Dad, can you come pick me up?
Yeah.
I'm scared." And she and John have just touched down in LA. For some reason, they're basically making this call like on the tarmac.
Yeah, where are they? The airport.
I mean, a plane is flying very closely overhead.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they decided to forego the taxi stand. They'll have to go back to it to get to Jean's in the first place. But for some reason, Sally has decided to make this phone call in like the windiest, noisiest environment possible.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense to me. Other than, I guess, not wanting other people to hear her or recognize that it is her. Because, you know, there is something to be said, I guess, for her being Sally Reed. Although I know we'll get to this later. When she straight up says it to a cop, he's like, "What are you talking about?" So maybe she didn't have to worry so much.
Hey, it's been 8 years. Maybe the Berkman story has gone cold until it's been warming up in the trades. Also, again, you mentioned the wig. Wouldn't this be like the least conducive environment with all of this wind blowing?
Oh, yeah. It was like straight up about to come off, this wig.
Well, her wig is about to be literally snatched later on. But in this moment, Jean says, "I gotta go take care of this one quick thing. Sally, go to my house. I'll meet you there. We'll figure all this out." We know in this moment, no matter what's happening, this meeting will never happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, RIP to the Foo Box before we even got to know them. They wind up in a very different box. I love the image of the four cardboard boxes simply sitting on the desk, blood seeping through, and Hank's associate just matter-of-factly saying, "We don't know that these are heads."
My question is, who delivers these boxes? They're clearly seeping with blood.
It's a good question. I would say Occam's razor is that it's probably one of Fuchs's guys just throwing them out onto the curb, driving by to make a statement. But knowing this world, I wouldn't be surprised if there is some sort of underworld task rabbit guy that has been given an extraordinary amount of money to ferret these severed heads to Hank.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, because I wouldn't think that Fuchs would send one of his guys to do this task because that gives the potential of him being hurt.
And Fuchs's guys have their own fires to fight, like the think tank, as to what to do about the plus ones on their compound. So we get this gruesome image of one of Fuchs's guys mopping up an extraordinary amount of blood, which is understandable given the fact that they did decapitate four of the most deadly men in the world, as Fuchs and his entourage are sitting on this couch across from this barista he picked up last episode and her daughter, freshly out of prison, to try to explain what happened. Fuchs says, "The ravens flock. We're blood artists. We're modern-day barbarians. Our clay are beating hearts of our enemies." And she just matter-of-factly replies, "Yeah, you've told us this a number of times." And it leads to this very Seinfeld-esque back and forth between all of these literal killers about what they could do to get them away and distracted from the blood-based carnage of any possible enemies coming their way, between taking them to a secondary location or noise-canceling headphones or putting on a very specific movie incredibly loudly.
It's a really loud Fast and Furious movie. It's the one with the planes.
Yes. And comedy is in the details. I absolutely love this one particular goon getting not only the exact movie of the Fast and the Furious franchise that has the plane, but also getting the exact release year of Fast and Furious 6. You know, if this man existed in our modern world, he's in line to see Fast X.
He's at the premiere in Rome. Are you kidding? Yeah. I mean, he probably can't leave the state. That's another thing. Yeah, this scene was probably, to me, the funniest scene of the entire show, episode. Like, there was just this bewildered-looking barista who still has not had a line on this show. And her daughter, who is just like, who are just sitting on the couch staring at these hired goons trying to figure out how their lives got here.
Yeah, I am so mystified by their lack of reaction. I guess either Fuchs coincidentally chose the right people to get in bed with, or he actually knows how to pick a person who is desensitized enough to just stare at you listlessly in response to cutting the heads off of some of the most deadly people in the world that were sent to kill him and the people closest to him. I just love their lack of reaction. They'll survive the carnage of it all by getting carted away, so maybe this is the last time we see them. I did think for a hot second, we'll obviously talk about the big epic one-shotter later on in this episode, when the one and only rocket gets fired off by Hank and it veers to the left, I did think for a hot second it was going to hit the Escalade that was carrying them away from the compound.
That would be terrible. So many things that I didn't think of because I was just in awe of everything happening in this episode. I was just living from moment to moment. If it had actually hit the Escalade, then that would be a stroke of luck that Hank never planned for. But also, you know, to those baristas out there, just if someone comes in full of tattoos, staring at you in a weird way, just keep doing your job. You know, don't go off with them and their clan of hired goons.
That really is the main life lesson to take away from Barry yes. at the end of all of this.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So Gene is going to meet with Matt Isrison in the park. And of course, in true dramatic Gene Cousineau fashion, he's not going to go as far as sending out a scavenger hunt of clues around LA, but he is going to have this clandestine meeting on a bench. And like a spy movie, he's going to insist that Matt pretend that he's talking on his phone while he's going to go into further detail about this offer. Daniel Day-Lewis loves the character of Gene Cousineau, the pathos, the courage, the huge personality. It's the total package. And of course, this is exactly what Gene wants to hear, that any mere mention of someone of that magnanimity playing him, immortalizing him on the screen, that's all it takes for Gene Cousineau to drop any pretense of how dare they make this movie to immediately start changing the narrative. Barry is a very complicated guy, but a sympathetic soul. He loves my character, and it makes him do stupid things, like killing my girlfriend.
Not only changing that narrative, but like being willing to get rid of the character completely because she's a cop. And like, just, I'm not even sure what the movie would be based on at that point. But yeah, just everything about his tune totally changed the second that he heard that this particular actor, that Daniel Day-Lewis, wanted to play him. That's like all he needed to hear.
Yeah, and what I do find so fun is I love later on when Gene ends up getting left kind of holding the bag and being accused of the guy who set everything up. Because again, this is such a tragic character. He was throughout season three, of just having to live this life where he knows that this son-like figure of his killed his girlfriend, and he is, you know, the man that has to be in this guy's life or else his family pays for it. But here, Gene is very much filling in this narrative that will be thrown back his way later on in that conference room when he says there is so much more that people know. What you think you've seen, what you think you've heard, it's only the tip of the iceberg. This is not a good guy, bad guy story. It goes way deeper than that. The fact that Gene has to dramatize for his own theatrical flares will really damn him in this case, as Matt slash Brad is very easily able to say later on, well, you did say that the story is more complicated than the one you initially gave. Mm-hmm. Ergo, your involvement in it is more complicated.
Yeah. I mean, he really did kind of like write his own check there, and like, it's time to cash it at this point when he meets up with all of the people at the intervention. Like, it is his own words that get him into trouble. And so often with Gene, this is the case.
Yeah, absolutely. His own words come back to bite him, much like a wayward rocket being launched, as we get our impressive feat of cinematography for the episode. As Fuchs' crew is parting it up, Hank has decided, if I want something right, I'll do it myself. He is going to set up this, turns out, lone rocket from onside the hill looking over the place. It is going to veer wildly, not hit the Escalade, but it is going to very much attract the attention of Fuchs's men. And we get this lovely single shot sequence, impressively done, of Hank and his driver trying to pull away and following these men pursuing him on foot, gunning down this driver. So Hank spins out into like another little plateau. He's going to hurriedly call Fuchs and tells him to call off his men, and Hank will take off running and go barreling over this bush and down the hill. And hearing the foley of just having Fuchs on the phone listening to all these bangings and thrums of Hank tumbling down this slope to, of course, Anthony Kerrigan's like, ooh, just sent me into absolute stitches. I thought this was a really well done piece of like action and darkness that is then finished off sweetly with this just ridiculous Looney Tunes-esque comedy.
It's so good. It's like from the rocket veering that way to you see the gunshots kind of going by, and then the car ending up in that little parking lot kind of thing, that little cul-de-sac almost. And then you hear Hank saying, you killed my driver, before he has to make a jump down whatever this like cavern is. And he's tumbling down. It's so well done. And it's so good. And the fact that it's all done in one is also just like another directorial feat by Bill Hader. It's really, really well done. Like, it's such a highlight of the episode, and I'm really glad that we got to have it in here as our little bit of action.
as much as I loved the really dark turn we've taken with Hank, as I mentioned before, this is what we love about NoHo Hank, is just his goofiness and endearing aspects in the face of this incredibly dark, dismal profession. Yeah. And so it was fun, even if it was at Hank's expense, to like see him have to go head over heels down a dusty hill trying to run away from Fuchs's guys that were shooting at him after one of his attempted killings failed.
It's a really good thing he didn't die falling down that hill. So I mean, obviously he's got a little bit of plot armor going on. He's got to get to the final episode, but still.
I mean, let's talk about a guy who has considerable plot armor here, who also winds up in a pretty sticky situation. Barry is finally going to come to. What's interesting is at this point, the goggles are off and the IV is no longer hooked up. So it seems like Jim Moss was truly done with him. He wasn't even going to leave him hooked up to his gadgetry, right? He pretty much said, F this, I have bigger fish to fry. Mm-hmm. And so Barry is going to very easily walk over, cut loose his restraints. He will use the knife to also open the door and cut open his hand in the process.
Yeah.
Pretty gnarly wound to the point where he is actually going to bleed out. He won't make it very far into Jim Moss's house. He just watches football through a crack in the window, assuming that Jim is still there, and we do as well. He is going to then say, oh no, realizing that, he's losing consciousness once again for a very different reason, and simply slumps up against the oven for a significant portion of time.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if he was bleeding out or if, like, Jim Moss put something on the knife, maybe, knowing that he was going to use it, because he left it, like, right there, and Barry's legs were free. And the football that we hear in the background is on a loop. So
yeah.
I think that like he had partially said like, you know, enough of this, like I have like bigger fish to fry, but also wanted to keep the nightmarescape going for Barry.
What's also significant is I don't know if this was the exact same audio or not, but the finale of season 3 also used the football audio, specifically to begin and end the episode. We didn't know what it was until the episode ended, but that was also playing in Jim Moss's house when Gene set up the sting to catch Barry.
Huh.
That's so really Jim Moss has a maneuver that he loves to use here.
He does, yeah.
So let's go back to Hank, who is, again, looking very much like Wile E. Coyote down to, like, the soot covering him in dirt from his trip down the hill. He'll yell at one of his associates for watching the budget in the way that he didn't mean to. Office supplies, please. Don't scrimp on the rockets. We need as many rockets as we can get here. But it doesn't matter. Hank is now in his, quote, give Fuchs whatever he effing wants phase. And even if that means that Barry is out there anywhere in the world, they feel like they have a reason they'd be able to find out his general location. I mean, they're going to realize they have a very different, probably better reason when they actually get there. But right now they're going after Gene. And at Gene's house, of course, happens to be Sally and John. So this is the moment you mentioned before. Sally is really coming to pieces here. There is even a moment that I think is really well done to represent sort of the mounting anxiety that Sally is undergoing. The world quiets around her, and you see her like eyes grow even heavier, her breathing starts to quicken, and then John asking a question fills the soundscape back in. He asks, what happens next once Dad gets here? And Sally replies, we keep doing what we're doing. And so Sally is going to see a police officer down the street just minding his own business. And unlike Mark Wahlberg, decides to approach him. And in this moment, right, this is something that's building up a very different type of anxiety, because she has been led to believe that, like, Barry's been a fugitive for 8 years, yeah, that she is on the run. And she's going to literally use the words, turn myself in. She very much weighed back and forth this idea of, okay, do I, you know, possibly implicate myself in everything I was involved with beforehand at the benefit of keeping me and my son safe from whatever I think it has been tailing me and driving into my house. But as she's about to do that, as you mentioned, the cop is not only going to sort of shrug off the Sally of it all, Sally is going to once again start seeing things. She sees, in fact, what this guy isn't seeing because he has a knife sticking into the side of his head as blood is coming out of his eye. Once again, a callback to the man that Sally killed at the end of season 3. It's going to scare her off enough to have her back away from the cop. And of course, as the cop is driving away, she does an about face and sees two men from Hank's entourage company, I suppose, because they have gone white collar.
They have.
Very softly taking John and Sally away.
Just another instance of the cops being totally useless, because if you see a woman who is clearly in distress standing right in front of you and you're just like, what? What? That's not helpful to anyone. And then he just drives away as people are being loaded into a van and kidnapped.
Yeah, John, though, is actually pretty chill for getting taken into this car. Like, I don't know what the conversation was for these two hired goons to be like, hey, kid, why don't you come with me? I mean, as we've talked about, John has had a very unique upbringing.
So
I would have
sheltered.
I would have thought that, like, his stranger danger meter would be off the charts, that he would just be screaming and like blowing whistles and spraying mace at anyone who he wasn't familiar with coming into his orbit.
It's possible that they didn't even teach him about stranger danger because they've kept him so isolated that they didn't think that anyone would come around.
I guess so, that's true.
It could be possible that he was just like, I guess I'll go with these people. Maybe they know my mom. I don't know. I'm in LA.
No one's a stranger in the kingdom of God. I could imagine Barry/Clark saying that at some point.
Exactly. Yes.
All right. Well, let's get the first of many twists and turns that start to end this episode of Barry. So Gene and Matt go to the Four Seasons to meet with Mark Wahlberg, but there never was any Mark Wahlberg. It was the happening like twist, LT, as we have a room filled with a regular who's who of people that are disappointed with Gene Cousineau. It's Jim Moss. It's the DA. It's that random officer who had been attempting to find Barry in episode 4. It is Matt/Brad, and it is Leo. And we get this delicious scene, in my opinion, of this fairly outrageous narrative starting to spiral of, okay, Gene, now we're starting to understand. It wasn't Barry Berkman who was behind all of this. It was you. And as we mentioned, Gene doesn't help his case when he's initially asked about the money and why he didn't come forward about it. He said he initially didn't tell anyone because, quote, no one was paying attention to me. And when you already did, I already spent some of it. And so a lot of things are now going to be hurled Gene's way, right? That he had shot his son to remove him from the equation because he didn't want Leo to know that he bought his house with Chechen drug money.
Yeah.
That this gangster who got sent to Gene's school, which did happen in season 1, specifically for Barry, was actually because it was involvement with Gene and Janice knew too much. And so she had to die at Gene's hands. And that Gene was the one to arrange a hit, Fuchs style, by Barry and with cooperation from Fuchs as well. What I love about this is it obviously compares to the label of the Raven being given to Fuchs throughout season 3 and him coming into that. And now that title is almost passed on to Gene, right? And it's not coincidental that it involves the Raven himself, that one of the reasons why Gene gets up kind of thrown onto this pyre is because this man who Gene knows is nobody at this point, but has become somebody in the Raven, happened to be involved. I would feel worse if it wasn't for what Gene was doing over the course of this episode.
Yeah, I don't feel bad for him at all. I feel like this is comeuppance that he, you know, deserves and probably has for a really long time. And, you know, disappearing for 8 years to live on a kibbutz kind of was honestly like him getting to live his life the way that he wanted to. Like, he's kind of had everything go, other than the fact that like his girlfriend was murdered, he's kind of had everything go his way, even though he's been responsible for some pretty dastardly deeds this entire time.
And what I love about it is, to your point, it really is the odd tasting slice of humble pie that Gene gets from this entire season for really pumping up his role in this entire thing.
Yes.
Where he refused to go along with the narrative that he was the victim. That right. through that one man show, he's the one saying that, like, I was the one to bring Barry Berkman into my life and I was the one to catch him at the end of the day. It could then easily peak on people's radars to not stretch too far to say, okay, if Gene really was this super smart guy to catch the serial killer in the act, what's to say that he wasn't smart enough to arrange the entire thing in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he really set all of this up himself. It all comes back to things that he said or did. And then it all comes back to the fact that he came out of the woodwork to try to virtue signal, essentially, to stop this movie from getting made.
So this is the last we're going to see of Gene and crew in this episode. What happens next? Is he going to, like, immediately get arrested and go on trial for what they're accusing him of?
That's a really good question. I mean, I guess technically he's got some questions that he's going to have to answer. He's going to have some pretty good questioning coming up from the cops. And yeah, it's possible that he does get put on trial and the narrative gets changed once again to him being the big bad of everything.
It would just be odd to me if he didn't have at least one more scene with Barry.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it would, considering that it seems like we have everyone but Gene kind of converging on one point and then just Gene on the other. I feel like you have to bring that stray electron back into the orbit of the atom, right? It would feel very odd to me if we just had Gene off on his own getting tried for these crimes that he did not commit while all the other characters are doing their thing together.
Yeah. I feel like that there's like a few things that, like, Barry has to see Gene again. Barry has to see Hank, obviously, again. And maybe Fuchs. Like, he has to come by these kind of three people that he's wronged in one way or another one more time in the finale.
Yeah, maybe it's something where he's going to, like, immediately call Sally and say, hey, can you let them know that there's been a misunderstanding and that I wasn't the one to kill Janice, et cetera, right. et cetera. And maybe through that, he'll find out about what's going on with Hank and Barry. And maybe then he'll sort of try to get the cops around him once again to say, hey, let's go get Barry Berkman. He's back. Remember when he escaped from prison almost a decade ago?
Yeah. I just, honestly, this show has surprised me in so many ways this season, especially, that I can't even start to speculate, even though that is our job, mm-hmm. as to what could possibly happen in the final episode, other than I know that there are character moments that need to occur for me to feel fulfilled. And one of those character moments, and those character moments have to do with Barry and the three people that he are kind of his touchstones.
Well, let's have something get checked off on the Barry bucket list that was a long time coming. Finally, LaTanya, in the penultimate episode of the series, NoHo Hank and Sally get to meet each yeah. other. It's wild to think about. It's an even more accelerated version of In Arrested Development when Lindsay and Buster never had any storylines together until the third season. It's just because Barry has kept his life so siloed throughout yeah. the first three seasons that the two characters never really had a reason to meet until this very occasion when his personal and professional can't help but collide.
Yes, and it is kind of like, I was hoping that there was a longer scene between the two of them because I've always wanted Anthony Carrigan to have a scene with Sarah Goldberg. Yeah, we get this like tiny little scene where they just kind of like acknowledge each other's existence, really. And he gets her to call Barry and get him on the phone. And we get the RIP to the wig.
Yeah, so let's bring up something you mentioned in the very beginning of the podcast. The great Jess Sterling had some very astute thoughts about Sally's wig. May it rest in peace. What did Jess have to say about her use of the wig?
Jess was just so astonished that instead of dyeing her hair brown, which she very easily could have done, she chose to wear a wig instead, which proves that Sally was trying to hold on to some of her old existence the whole time that she was in hiding. And I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I absolutely love that remark as well. It would be so much easier to just dye your hair and not have to sweat under a wig every day. But the fact that we talked about the resignation of Sally, I think, when we jump into the future permanently in episode 5. But I think Jess makes a really salient point that if she is still putting on the wig every day, either there is some sort of routine that she has become used to where she has to do this, or it is still some glimpse in her subconscious hanging on to this idea of either putting on a performance of, okay, this is just a temporary role and I'll move on to other gigs soon, aka back to LA, or both.
I think it's putting on a performance. I think that she really, like, I think that they showed that whole scene of her getting ready to go to the diner to work for a reason, because it's her being back in hair and makeup again and really putting on the character that she's portraying here and going out and doing her job, you know, and she's putting on the accent at the same time. It's character driven because Sally is nothing if not an actress.
I love the first exchange of dialogue we get between Hank and Sally is Hank pulling off Sally's wig, just saying, "Sally Reed, great." And then he just walks away, essentially saying, "Oh, look at this. I wanted to aim for catching a trout and I caught a whale. I thought Gene would be the way to get us to Barry, but great. I kidnapped his girlfriend and son by accident."
Yeah. It was a really truncated scene to have between these two like behemoths of characters that have never met before, but also just kind of perfect and great, like very amuse-bouche. Like just like, oh, wonderful, huh? And then he leaves.
Well, let's finish things off as Barry finally comes to in the dark of the night. We hear some music chiming off from the distance. Of course, freaking Barry has a gospel song as his ringtone, right? Talking about how great the Lord is. As he answers it, he thinks it's Sally. He immediately apologizes and says that he's okay, but it is Hank. And he tries to menacingly do the thing of like, tell Barry that he needs to come save you. And Sally's just not giving an F right now. Like, John seems legitimately scared. Sally's like, Barry, please come save us. Like, I don't know if it's that she figures that Hank can't do anything or she's just so done with it that she just is going to give a half-assed performance here.
It's a very half-assed performance. I think she's just kind of over it. She's just like, great, now we're kidnapped. Come please rescue us.
The ultimate form of same shit, different day.
Exactly.
I was a captive in my own home. Now I'm a captive in someone else's home.
Yeah, except now I don't have booze.
So now we're going to finish things off on a very disquieting image. It's simply from the back of Barry's head. Upon hearing this news, he is going to put his head down, steel himself by putting his head on the mantle, and he starts to vibrate. And this is that quiet rage we have seen from him in the past, most recently in him looking at himself in the mirror in prison to open the season. We have known about Barry's rage issues, which have really come to the forefront in season 2, and how incredibly dangerous they can be. LT, should we be prepping ourselves for another monastery-esque, you know, Last of Us season finale mow down of all of Hank's men to get to Sally and John?
I think so. I mean, it's chilling to watch this performance from Bill Hader that's just the back of his neck, like, contorting. But there's some very, like, Cape Fear-esque vibes coming off of him. I am excited for this finale for a lot of reasons, but I want to see, like, what Barry is going to do when he's back in this mode that he's been out of for years.
Right. I mean, let's compare it to a similar type of rundown for a similarly dark show. Breaking Bad, Walter White goes away for a sojourn for a brief period of time, right? Comes back, decides to take on the big bads that, you know, have his quote unquote loved ones in captivity by, you know, designing this ingenious machine and being able to gun everyone down with his knowledge of science. Barry, I think, is going to go a little bit more practical in that regard. I don't know. I'm of a couple different minds here where I could see him do it. But we have also gone in that direction so many times before of, oh no, Barry's cornered, but he's going to use his way to work his way out of it. Hell, we just saw it only a few episodes ago with how he escaped prison. So would it feel repetitive to have this happen yet again? It would certainly be entertaining. And I know we are in store for like probably a hell of a one-er putting the Daredevil hallway fight to shame as Barry's just going to take down all these Chechens. At the same time, as you've mentioned, this show has surprised us at every turn. I can only imagine that they have one final surprise in store for us. And maybe Barry ends up trying to go in there guns blazing and gets the guns blazed on him and he goes down.
It's very possible. There's also the possibility that we get something that might seem a little bit repetitive, but the stakes are different now because John is involved. And so the only thing that he seems to care about is what his son thinks of him. And his son is about to learn a completely different side of his father and will never be able to see him in the same way, regardless of what happens.
Yeah, Barry's going to have to show John a bunch of differing podcasts about how you should honor thy father and thy mother to make sure that he is excused in his actions.
Yeah. Barry doesn't have to make a Walter White-esque weapon, though. He can just go to the local Walmart, apparently.
Yeah, just have to look at some gnarly-looking pictures. But Barry had that in his hand earlier in the episode, so he is more than fine with it. What I'm not fine with is the fact that we have one episode of Barry left. Very little information out about the finale at this point. All we know is the episode is titled Wow. I have not seen anything about the runtime of the finale. This is airing right after the Succession series finale, which has been reported to be like feature length. I don't know if they're planning to extend the Barry episode past its typical runtime, if we're going to get like a 42-minute or even hour-long series finale of Barry. LT, I'm going to have you do the impossible. Can you try to make a bold prediction for something we'll see in the finale, either a death, a particular ending for a character, a cameo? What's one thing you expect we'll see in next week's finale?
We actually get Mark Wahlberg.
Hey guys, what's going on?
No, I don't want that. I really don't. Let's see. Okay. All right. One prediction. John has to save the day in some way.
Interesting. And do you think he has that baked in aptitude that his father has? Is it nature versus nurture here?
It's possible. It's possible that he has it baked in. I don't know. He seems way more like a tender hearted, you know, like theater kid than he does like a cold hearted killer. But it would be very interesting if they had to kind of reckon with the next generation. In a way here. Another prediction that I can make, and these are just wild things that I'm totally pulling out of my ass. Let's see. Maybe in some show of loyalty, Fuchs and his goons come to the rescue and we get the reunion between Barry and Fuchs, or an ultimate showdown between the two of them.
Yeah, I definitely had that in my cards as well. I could see a situation where Fuchs and his guys would take out the Chechens, because remember, the deal wasn't exactly that solid still. No. Of, hey, you fired a rocket at my house, so I'm assuming that the loose partnership we had is now off. Let me take care of Barry myself and sort of cut the middleman here. I agree. I could totally expect Barry to go in there, maybe check out some Chechens. He is on the ropes when Fuchs's guys come through, and Fuchs has the mentality of, I want to take care of him myself. I want Barry to know it was me.
Yeah, exactly. What else? I mean, I think that Hank kind of has to get got for like the sin of Cristobal, if not anything else. So I'm forecasting that Hank doesn't make it out of the episode.
Oh, man. No ho Hank dying.
I know. It's not what I want. But like Anthony Carrigan could do a hell of a death scene.
Oh, yeah. 100%. And it would also be, you could see it in your mind's eye, right? Like him on this beach watching Cristobal and like reaching out and holding his hand. They're finally back together after all this time. I could very much see that, not necessarily storybook ending, but certainly something there. I'll cop one that I used beforehand, which is I think that Gene is going to try to rally the law around him, partially to protect himself by saying, hey, let us go get Barry. Let us have him explain his side of the story. And so I think we'll sort of get an it's a mad, mad, mad world type of thing where everyone is converging on the same location at the same time. And I expect a very high body count by the end of it.
I just like that I got all your pop culture references this episode.
Exactly. It's all working. We just need to put all Mark Wahlberg's movie references in, and we are essentially going to have a 100% success rate. I think my final prediction will be, I think Sally. I think she dies.
Yeah.
Because I don't know where she goes from here. Unless she used the cop's lack of recognition as a sign that, like, she can now make a name for herself again, that enough time has passed that she can have her own comeback, Lisa Kudrow style. I'm not sure. I don't know how she escapes from this, though, especially considering that, like, she cares very little about her family.
Yeah, she doesn't really care about her family at all. You know, she's out of booze. I don't even know how she's, like, facing the day. So what's her motivation here is the big question that any actress would ask, and she doesn't really have one.
Yeah, I mean, she seemed to not have some motivation when she was prompted to tell Barry to come get her, right? Could it be that she already has a death wish at this point? I mean, we have seen
it's possible.
We've seen her be so tortured these past two episodes about the actions that she did. Could this be a moment where Sally's like, it's not worth it to go on anymore with this guilt, with this knowledge of me taking another life? Well, she is surrounded by all these men who were able to do so and get up in the morning. It might be too much for her.
It might be. She kind of seems a little bit resigned to her fate, which makes me think that something, you know, we could get some bad things for Sally. I mean, is it ultimately what do you think the show is saying, though, if Barry makes it out alive?
I guess the question is, what has the show been trying to tell us this entire time?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because that's definitely been a debate around Succession, right? Especially as we're winnowing down to those final hours as to what has the show been about. I mean, in the first couple seasons, Bill Hader and Alec Berg made it clear that the show was about the roles that we play, both on the stage and in real life to various peoples in our life, etc. That kind of went away with season three. Season four, we brought it back a bit with the witness protection stuff in, you know, in Midland America. But I'm not sure if they do want to walk forward with a final message. And I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up in an outcome for one of its worst perpetrators in Barry being the one to survive it all with his son by his side. They go down a very dark path. And to your point, like The Wire, the cycle starts anew where now John is the new Barry and he becomes the Fuchs, essentially starting him on this journey and getting to see it all happen all over again.
And then Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now plays.
Yes, exactly. Then it'll cut to black in the middle. Let's just take care of like all of the main series finales of big shows in the past 15 years. I still cannot believe I'm saying series finale. But
I know. What are we gonna do?
Well, it's a big question mark considering I'm not sure what the state of TV is gonna look like in a post-Barry world. But we don't have to think about that for the next week, as next time you'll be hearing from us is to recap the Barry finale. Now, cards up, the recording schedule on this episode may be a bit different than usual. We are very grateful to our colleagues at HBO for sending us these episodes ahead of time to be able to bank these and release them right when the episode drops on HBO. That may not be the case here due to a discrepancy in schedules. It may be coming to you a bit later, but the latest it would come to, I'd say, would be like midday, early afternoon on Monday, because suffice it to say, there is going to be a lot to talk about from this finale. Will our predictions come true? Who will survive the night? And in what ways will Barry surprise us? Regardless of what is happening here, LaTanya, you are talking about plenty of stuff out there in the vast landscape of post-show recaps of the plains, the beaches, and everything in between. What have you been noshing on besides a nice meal in the form of Barry's penultimate episode?
Speaking of very nice meals, Top Chef. I've been working on a little Top Chefing for Rahap. So Haley Strong and Kurt Clark and I have been talking all about season 20, the international all-star season of Top Chef, where we just had our most recent episode was a double episode about both Restaurant Wars and then about the Thali that they had to make. So that was very interesting to do. We've never done a double episode before. So that was kind of an exciting podcast. So tune in for that. Sorry for all of the issues that we had getting you the podcast in the first place, but then you got a nice double episode from us. On the PSR side, I am podcasting about Love and Death, which is now at its trial phase. So hopefully some good stuff going to come out of that. Listen, this show shouldn't exist, but, you know, we already have Candy. It is the exact same story, but they made it and Elizabeth Olsen is in it. And so I'm going to be there. And so should you, if you want to hear me and, the birthday girl, Sarah Carradine, talk all about all things love and death, tune in for that. And finally, Josh Wiggler and I are constantly on our BS and we are talking versus it is Succession versus Yellow Jackets.
I was going to say BS or bees?
Both. Bees beats Battlestar Galactica. and we are having a really good time trying to figure out why these two shows about, you know, eating people and killing folks are so compatible in Succession's final season and the second season of Yellow Jackets. So that's been a whole lot of fun. Hope you've been tuning into that. We've got a hell of a show coming up next week because the Yellow Jackets episode that aired today is wild. And it's Logan's funeral coming up, people. So even the preview for that episode left me with like goosebumps. So I can't imagine how great it's going to be. Please tune in for all of that. If you want to see and hear what I am doing, you can find me on Twitter at LK Starks, and you can find me on Instagram at Stormborn1222. Thank you to all the people who have been actually following me on Instagram. I promise that this weekend I will have content for you.
Well, you can follow me at a Mike Bloom type. I'm finishing up some other coverage as, you know, all these shows are coming to an end this coming week. Mrs. Davis did the trendy thing and wrapped early with an absolutely bananas finale that has me really excited for the truly banana stuff we're going to be getting in the Barry series finale in the next week. We've got a lot of ramping down from that. Did a finale recap with Josh and Joe. We talked with Alethea Jones, who was the director of three episodes of the series, as well as we're having a chat next week with Andy McQueen, a series star, to talk through some of your feedback, of which I'm assuming there is a lot, considering, again, said bananas aspects. I'm also covering Silo, which is starting to round into the end of its first half alongside Dr. Amanda. A bit of a slow down week for Silo compared to last week, but still lots of intrigue and lots of mystery therein. But Barry-wise, that's going to do it for this week. We are going to bid adieu to the final non-finale episode of Barry as we see this all come to a close next week. Will all of our predictions be promptly thrown out the window in the first couple minutes? I'm sure. And something completely out of nowhere, nouveau, yet invigorating will replace it as we see these characters off one last time and the lights will fade. And we'll see whose lights fade as well, depending on who ends up making it out alive from this finale. Really look forward to talking about that with you, LT, next week. Again, schedule and release depending. So thank you all so much for listening as per usual. Until next week, take care, bye-bye, and scene.
We With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.